Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio. And your front row.
Welcome to the Triple M Sunday Rub for McDonald's.
Triple M rocks footy.
Massive afternoon from Etihad Stadium. The Saints must beat the Kangaroos today underneath the roof if they are to have any hope of playing finals this year. Got a big preview coming up. Sam Gilbert will join us on Triple M Footy in the lead-up to the game against the Kangaroos. What about Johnny Worsfold? The Bombers moved a step closer to possibly playing finals for the first time in a while too. That was a great win last night against the Gold Coast Suns. Luke McDonald will join us in the Kangaroos rooms as they get ready to take on the Saints. Rod Butters with some explosive comments about his time as the president of St Kilda back in the day. He's going to join us a little bit later on as well, just to put some context with regards to why he's done it and what's been the response with regards to some of those comments. Ollie Wines, a big win to Port Adelaide against the Western Bulldogs. We've got Jay-Z's big three. And, of course, what about these Hawks to miss the finals since the first time since 2009? If Melbourne win today, they move a step closer to a possible finals appearance for the first time in 11 years. Dogs must beat the Hawks next week to at least make the finals. The ladder and the finals machinations. The Tigers nervously playing for a top four spot, taking on Fremantle later today. And I tell you what, as I work around this box, the weather's changing. And you know when the weather's changing, when the King walks in with a very short, tight pair of King G shorts. Welcome, Duck.
G'day, boys. How are we, listeners? I tell you what, Swatter, unlike yourself, or you've probably been out with your Lycra on this morning having a ride, considering the beautiful weather. But what a beautiful morning in Melbourne just to get up, go for a run. Took my little Charlotte to the park and rolled around in the grass. The grass wasn't even dewy. That's what a beautiful morning it has been. And these are the days you want to play footy and come to work, aren't they?
Sitting next to the King in his shorts is a man that's still rugged up for winter weather, and that is Paul Ruse. Welcome, the Zen Master.
Oh, I agree with Duck. Went out on the golf course this morning. Beautiful weather. It was very nice. D-Ruse had me by a shot, but I was able to hit him on the last. Just he putted for victory.
Of course.
Choked.
Where?
Just a little Elston Wick. Just a little, you know, a little hour 15 job. Nice. Nothing. Yeah, you know, so he drew. But he was up and about because I've sort of smacked him the last few times. So
nice.
But he did choke, I must admit. So really good morning.
Yes.
Beautiful Melbourne morning. And as we look out, see the sun. Oh, the roof's shut.
As we welcome.
These are the mornings, Swatter.
Yes.
These are the mornings where you just wake up and you can smell people cutting their lawn. The birds are chirping. The sun's out and you just pray you're playing on Jace McCartney.
As I welcome Jay Clark.
Duck, you've changed your story. You've been giving it to one of the Wakeland twins forever.
They got upset and I heard we've got very close mutual friends, and given that they both played 200 games, I was little bit of heckling going on when they went out. So I just thought I'll pull that up and use Jace, who's another friend, but I'll just, you know,
throw him under
use
the bus.
Him for a while, because he was good to play on.
This is the Triple M Sunday Rub for McDonald's Triple M Rocks Footy. We will chat with Mickey Roberts a little bit later on when he checks in with Sammy Gilbert, a couple of Saints champs down there. But you walk in, Jay-Z, and every now and again, well, not on a Sunday, because normally it's reserved for the Saturday afternoon operators, but clearly, there's some angst in our box today. Howie's away somewhere, I think Botswana, and clearly there's an issue, and quite frankly, it's an elephant in the room.
Can I just,
and we must clear it up, Duck.
Yeah, and can I just say, as you guys know, that I'm a body language expert. My body language numerous times, Rusey, has been judged and not judged at certain times.
I think there are body language experts.
There are. Geez, I've had plenty of them say that they've read my body language. So I just figured I'd have a crack at it, Swatter.
Right.
Yes, but now you continue.
Okay. All right. So you're gonna whack somebody else, are you?
No.
Right. Okay. Then there's clearly something that needs to be cleared up, and it started during the course of the week, and I think it may have involved you, Duck, with a couple of things that you had to say about someone in this box.
His body language when he talks about Collingwood is seemed to me this year to be just a little different, and I've said earlier that I think that Ruse would have definitely been spoken to by Eddie Maguire. I get the feeling that if Paul Ruse doesn't coach Collingwood next year, then Nathan Buckley will be.
Have you asked him the direct question then? You work with him. Have you asked Paul Ruse the direct question?
Jay Clark has.
Yeah, and what did he say?
And he says that he won't be coaching Collingwood.
Okay, so
he did say that about Melbourne quite a few times as well.
Well, I'm a hard-hitting sort of journalist now.
So are you asking the question to Roosie Duck today?
Seeing as though we're here, I will say...
Look at the body language of the journo. He's carrying in the court. He wants you to ask him the question.
I will say, though, that most weeks when I come in here, Roosie is a lovely bloke and we get along very, very well. And I've noticed he did have his arms folded when I first walked in. So I don't know if that was a deliberate thing or not. But I tell you what, I also during the week, which I do every second week, I do the breakfast radio with Eddie and Darce and Mick Malloy.
Yep.
And so not only did I ask, say that about Roosie on the Monday, actually, let's have a listen to what I said during
good
the
idea.
Week.
Does it make a difference what Collingwood do over the next 2 weeks, whether Nathan Buckley would be, say, reinstated or not?
Well, it always helps when you win, doesn't it? But I said this when
So the next two weeks are important.
No, don't put words in my mouth.
No, I'm not.
I said this at a press conference when Gary Peart resigned 3 weeks ago. I said, no, it will not make any difference because we're looking at the totality of the whole situation.
Would it matter, Ed, if there wasn't one of those big names available for the coaching? If you were to look outside...
I'm not going into speculation.
Roosie, clear this up for us.
So I didn't... as you can see there, just real...
That was hard-hitting.
Just real hard-hitting
to
the big Eddie Maguire. And I was
still haven't asked Roosie the question yet.
I'm packing myself while I was doing it. okay, Roosie, have you spoken to Ed? Now, you work with Ed every Friday night.
Yep.
Has there ever been any discussion about the state of the footy club, whether you would consider it, whether you wouldn't consider it? Is there been any of those types of inquiries?
Nah, look, I haven't spoken to anyone at Collingwood, and I think as an industry that we are a little bit sceptical, but I think it's a unique situation with Bucks and Eddie. Because generally, and I don't know this for a fact, but generally if someone's in a position, that Nathan's in, you would think that the club was speaking to other people. But I think this situation's very unique. And I think what Eddie's been has been really honest and really upfront about it. And I think a lot of it has to do, I'm not suggesting Eddie's not normally upfront, but I think a lot of it has to do with their relationship. And I think they've got a very good relationship. And when you listen to Eddie talk about Nathan, he often says, I think Nathan will do the right thing by the football club. And even Jay-Z, there's been times when Nathan has sought it. Now, I know, I think he might have been taken a little bit out of context, but I think there's a couple of times where he sort of said, look, I need to decide whether I want to coach Collingwood. Not in that direct terms, but something along those lines. So I think the relationship between those two. So I generally believe in this situation, which is a little bit unique, I think they will not speak to anyone until round 23 is over. And then maybe they'll go and speak to other people, depending on what the review says.
Okay, so this time next week, plus, I don't know, 6 hours, would you be expecting a call and would you take a call from Eddie Maguire given that they play next Sunday against Melbourne?
Yeah. Would you sit down and
so
have
that
a
would
chat
be
with
over. Would you sit down and have a chat? If he called you and said, we would love to have a chat to you about, and now that might be, help us out, find the next coach. That might be, would you coach? Would you take that call and be interested in doing that?
Look, I will not coach. If I was asked to coach Collingwood, I wouldn't coach Collingwood. Last year, Ross Thornton rang me and said, look, would you be on the coaching panel for Brisbane Lions? Rossy Thornton's a mate of mine. He's on the Brisbane board. We caught up for a coffee in Brighton. So, Purdy was a good mate. Well, he's a good mate of mine. He was the CEO of Collingwood. So I over the last 6 years, obviously not when I was coaching Melbourne, but in the 3 years prior, I fielded a lot of calls from a lot of people within the football industry in relation to, some of the
candidates.
Some of the discussions they were having, et cetera, et cetera. So that's not to be misconstrued with I was offered jobs. No. And I think in this situation, what I don't want to do is mislead people. Oh, I get on well with Eddie. If Eddie rang up and said, mate, can you catch up for a coffee? Yeah, I'd be happy to have a coffee with Eddie. There's no problems whatsoever about that.
Would you fill another position then? So if it's not the senior coach, would it be a director of coaching or manager of leadership or an other role?
I mean, look, they're hypotheticals. I'm away pretty much from September 30th through January 15. I'm coming back here for about 2 weeks to do a number of engagements. But, so in that relation, my mind is on different things, and I've sort of moved on from that. Again, I don't like to mislead people, and I try to answer questions as they're asked to me at that particular time. So as it sits now, the furthest thing from my mind is getting involved in a football club in any capacity.
It's nice to feel wanted, though, Roosie. You do see that with a bit of a smile on the face.
The one thing that we didn't sort of play there. That off the back of those comments, I was saying, you'd be neglecting your duties if you weren't approaching Paul Roos or anyone for that matter out of the game that has been a great at their job.
In terms of the process then, Roosie, do you think if Collingwood said to Bucks, look, we're not sure, we got the review, we're going to go through it, we want you to present to the board, do you then expect Collingwood to go to market to see who is available? Would that be a wise move?
I think if you look at the way their process has panned out, and as I said, I think Eddie's been really honest about it, I'd be surprised, given they've waited so long, I would be surprised if they're going to make a decision within the first 2 or 3 days or week. I think if you're going to wait... And the coach is contracted till October 31st anyway. So if you're going to wait till the end of the season, I don't see there's any rush for them to make a decision on Nathan or not on Nathan. You might as well take the next month or so to actually do that. Now, that might include, guys, we're going to all go away and we're going to come back and make a decision. So you might actually take a breather for 3 weeks. I'm not suggesting that you wait for the sake of it, but I think, given they've waited so long, I think you've got to be really clear in the process and you give yourself more time, whatever that process is.
And does that part include looking at other options? Clarko, Horse, Brad Scott, etc. Do they need to at some point get the lay of the land?
Well, I think the first part of the process, correct me if I'm wrong, is the report that they're doing. Now, that report might say Nathan Buckley needs to be reappointed. If that's the case, well, I don't know when the report's actually completed. Now, that might be the case.
Tuesday.
That report might say, look, we're still unsure on Nathan. We need to check on who's available and we need to get Nathan then to present his blueprint to the board. So I think clearly the first part of it is what does that report state in relation to the senior coach of the Collingwood Football Club?
So right. I can think we can safely say, Roosie, you'll be in Hawaii at some stage during October with no plans to come back in a hurry.
No, that's exactly right.
All right, fairly good.
My expertise body language sort of radar right now. I don't think he's coaching.
nicely done. On the coaching merry-go-round, what's happening with the Gold Coast Suns, Jay?
Well, Brad Scott is the man who's come into odds-on favouritism for that job. Certainly the juggle
jumps. Got one more year at the Kangaroos?
Yeah, and it's sort of really decision time now, I think, for North Melbourne, where they're either going to reappoint him or basically mutually...
Reappoint him, though? You mean extend his current contract?
Yeah, excuse me. Extend him. Or otherwise mutually agree to part terms. So I had an interesting conversation with Brad Scott 2 years ago where he sort of talked about hypothetically whether 9 or 10 years is enough time for one coach at one senior
club. Do you agree with that time frame, Roosie?
Oh, I think there was a fascinating article. I'll answer it in a different way. I thought, which was dismissed, Jay-Z. There was a great article that Mark Williams wrote, and it was early in the year. I think it was in relation to Nathan Buckley.
Yep.
It might have been another coach. Talking about timing in coaching. Mm. But it's not only timing in coaching, it's timing for a football club. And I think there's no doubt had Choco Williams left the year before that he got this flick at Port, he would have got another job.
Yep.
And would Port have been more successful quicker? Potentially. So I think there's two really big issues. I think that article was dismissed for whatever reason, but I thought his intention around the article was absolutely accurate. Mm. Timing is everything, both for a football club and a senior coach. If you want to be a career senior coach and you miss that timing, Mark Williams' record is as good as anyone in the last, apart from Clarko, who's won the four premierships, et cetera, but his record is as good as anyone. Mm. His timing was probably the worst in the AFL, and he hasn't been able to get a job, which is an indictment on the system, because he should be coaching, or he should have at least got another crack at coaching. So the answer to the question, Swatter, is I believe there is a use-by date for a coach. From a club point of view, and I'm not making a specific comment on Scotty. I'm saying, yes, I think there is. But equally, if you're a career coach, you have to be aware of the landscape about how your club sees you, where that club is at the moment, what other positions are available in that situation.
All right, strong start on the Sunday, Rub. Brad Scott is the front runner for the Gold Coast Club.
He is, position favourite ahead of Johnny Barker and Dean Solomon.
And quickly around the grounds, we've got the early game underway in Melbourne playing for a top eight spot, Jay-Z.
At the MCG, and it's Brisbane. Up by 2 points over the Demons. We'll keep close eye on it.
Why don't you get me to do around the grounds?
No, we might just replay the audio from last week when Duck gave us a live score update. In fact, we're getting the nod in the back row. Some of the finest radio work from the King last week. This man, Mickey Roberts, a big part of the Sunday team with Sam Gilbert. Robbo, welcome to you for the first time today for Bob Jane T-Mart.
Thank you, Swatter, and I've got Sammy Gilbert with us, and the only two players out in the ground at the moment down here are Nick Riewoldt and Sammy Gilbert. So today, Sammy's all about Nick, really. His last game, home game, actually. The fact that he's won six best and fairest, five All-Australians, longest-serving captain at St Kilda, been an out-and-out star on and off the ground. It'd be nice to win for Nick today.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody knows how good Nick is as a player and as a leader, and I've been pretty lucky to be underneath him for so long. You know, hopefully today we can rally together and play the way that he deserves us to play.
So you got Nick on his last legs, really, and then Joey too. We can't afford to leave him out of the equation, Joey Montagna. But you yourself, 196 games, and you started back in 2006. Are you going on next year?
Yeah. Look, it's you know, we haven't put pen to paper, but look, everything's very positive at the moment, and looking forward to making that happen and being out here again next year.
Sam, Paul Roos, mate, how are you? I caught up with Nick. It's great to see players sort of out of their natural habitat, in a sense, out of the footy club. So Nick Riewoldt was at the local coffee shop this morning with the kids and, you know, his wife and the family. It was great to see him, you know, really relax before the first game. Tell us a little bit more about what he's like when he arrives. Is he the sort of guy that, I know he's out in the ground warming up, but when does that sort of relaxed Nick Riewoldt kick into that real competitive beast that we've seen, you know, over the last sort of 17-odd years?
Rui's one of the best competitors I've seen and one of the hardest trainers I've played with. So he's totally different when he's at the club and when he's away from the club. He's always on when he's at the club. He's always working hard. He's always, you know, even before training, he's listening to music. He's getting himself ready to go. He wants to go there and really train as well as he can. But then, you know, socially away from the club, he's just a normal dad. He's always caring for his kids. He's always, you know, showing videos of his kids. He's such a proud father. And, you know, Cass, he's got such a beautiful wife and a beautiful family. And, you know, as far as Rue is concerned, I think once he does finish footy, he's got everything he's got. He hasn't got to worry post-football because everything he's got in life, it's there forever. And, you know, he's going to be just fine.
It was great to see him on the little scooter this morning too. So he put on his little video. So you're right, and Catherine down there, and he's scootering back to his house from the local coffee shop. So Sam, I suppose the commentary a little bit this year around St Kilda was they needed to make the finals. I probably don't necessarily subscribe to that. I mean, it's not necessarily you're always going up. So that, you know, you still have the potential to win the 12 games last year. But probably from a St Kilda point of view, has the frustration been a little bit more around the difference between your best and worst, which is probably still a little bit too great? Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, you don't want to be known as a side that can be really good and really average the next week. So we've got to definitely focus on making sure we have a more consistent performances week in, week out. Obviously, we're here to play finals. That's what we want to do. That's no longer in our control, and all we can do now is, you know, just try and win the next 2 weeks and just hope, you know, things fall in our favour. But, you know, it's also important to finish the season well. So, you know, we've got to knuckle down and make sure we play up to that end of the bargain.
Sammy, I was crunching some goal-kicking numbers this week, and it wasn't exactly pretty reading for St Kilda. Has Coach Alan Richardson addressed that amongst the group?
Yeah, no, we've addressed that. It's something that, you know, we're continually working on. We've got some goal-kicking programs that we've been doing all year that we do before training, and it's something that we're definitely working on. It's definitely a focus of ours. Unfortunately, it hasn't, you know, it hasn't been too positive, but you can see that can change really quickly. And we'll just continue to work on that and make sure that's not a factor.
Have you changed anything, Sam? Like, if you keep doing the same thing and it's not delivering results, do you think it's time that you should change that up?
Yeah, no, there has been changes. You know, the kicking program is obviously changed as the season's gone on. To be more specific, to more concentrate on different angles. You know, we've put targets up behind the goalposts so that we can, you know, aim for certain things. So there's definitely been changes. Just unfortunately, it hasn't quite come onto the field just yet.
Sam Gilbert from the Saints talking to us on Triple M Footy in the lead up to their game with the Kangaroos.
Hey, Gilbo, do you, excuse me, just to continue to touch on, I'm fascinated about the goal kicking because we saw a team on Friday night in the Adelaide Crows kick 3 goals, 7 from set shots, and Sydney kicked 8 goals, 2. Invariably, that's the difference in the game. When you talk about program, so I get what a program is. Is there a specific goal kicking coach that works with players one-on-one though, or do you all go through this same program that you talk about?
No, Benny McLinn's definitely be doing one-on-one with a lot of the forwards and a lot of the mids and backs if we wish to contribute in that. So that we've definitely got Benny in place who breaks down your kicking action and really works on, you know, getting your technique right. But at the same time, everyone's got an individual technique which they need to work on. It's hard to have one size fits all for goal kicking. So, you know, we'll, like I said before, we'll work on it and Benny will work on it as well. And I think it will turn around because of all the work we have been putting in.
Sammy, just back to Rui for a second. Have you watched any of those inspirational videos yet? Have you done that? Or are you going to go back in and see that mark again where he's running back with a flight against the Swans? Have you watched any of that stuff just yet just to get yourself really pumped up?
I've been pretty lucky to play with him for 12 years. So I've got a few etched in my memory. I think he kicked 9 on my debut. He had a Joe the Goose over the goalkeeper, but didn't give it. But that's okay. I forgive him for that.
Hey, yeah, Sammy, we appreciate you joining us today. It's a big day for the club and Rui, and you must win to give yourself a chance of playing finals later this year. Thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers.
Thanks, Sam Gilbert there. And a big thank you also to Claire White, the media manager at the Saints, Matty Finnis, the Saints team down there, just giving us access in the lead up to the game, because not every club does that. The Kangaroos doing good to see the Saints doing it. Jake?
Are you coaching against St Kilda in that game, Rusey? I'm trying to think.
He took the mark, yeah. I think I was. What year was that? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was
2004.
I think Jared Crouch was coming one way and Rui was going about 120 miles an hour coming the other way.
He's seen a more courageous thing on the footy field
That's the best mark I've ever seen. The best one was Leo Barry's in the grand final 2005. But given the context of what it was the best mark I've ever seen, I think.
Yep. Just quickly around the grounds, near map aerial imagery, Jay.
Brisbane, decent start, leading by 1 point over Melbourne, 128 to the Demons, 117.
The coach of Essendon, doing some nice things, Johnny Worsfold, will join us after the next break. But if you just want to know why we have Duck doing specials and why we don't get him to go around the ground, tune into this. Around the grounds, near map aerial imagery on the Sunday Rub. Big game, Duck.
Yes, Melbourne by 34 points. The Saints have actually just kicked a goal. So 28-point lead to Melbourne.
How far into that game, please?
We've got 3 minutes and 44 seconds to go in the second term. Howie, I might have just been watching a replay. It's actually...
34.
It's 34 points. 34.
Oh, boy.
The Bombers, a 33-point win on the road against the Gold Coast Suns last night at Metricon Stadium. They currently sit in 7th place and they take on Fremantle back here at Etihad Stadium 1-10 next week. They win that. They are finals bound. It'll be the first time in 3 years they've gone through a really tough period. The man who's in charge and doing a great job joins us right now on the Triple M Sunday Rub, Johnny Worsfold. Welcome, Woosha.
Oh, thanks very much.
A good win on the road last night.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we know where it's all at. We're up there to win. It wasn't a real exciting game, I would imagine, to watch. There was a couple of highlights, but overall we knew we had to work through the defensive game that the Gold Coast brought, keep that pressure on them, and slowly it would open up for us.
Hey, Woosha, you must be excited. You know, the ball's in your court. You know, you win games. I think the team's... in and around you have some really tough games next week. So you win next week and I think you're almost certain of playing finals footy. It must be really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that means we can just focus on our game. Let's go in, have the win. We don't have to worry too much about everything else. So it's nice to just have that narrow focus. And, you know, we know, not under any illusion, that Freo will come over and take it right up to us. So we look forward to that. But as we've said all along, we've got to beat these teams. If you really want to believe that you're worthy of being in the top eight, we have to win next week to show we've earned it.
Hey, Woosh, I guess like everyone, when you do your top eight the start of the year, probably Essendon were the hardest team to place.
I just don't want to wee in my own pocket here, Woosher, but I actually had Essendon.
Oh, boy.
I had the Bombers in eighth position.
I actually, it's funny, Duck, you should say that, because I thought they were 8, 9, 10. But, Woosh, when you look back on the year, and obviously there's another week to go, and you probably haven't even reflected, but when you look back at the pre-season, I guess it was probably a wide parameter even for you as a coach to sort of think, well, you know, we could win 6 games, we could win 15 games. I mean, when you reflect back on it, what were some of the thoughts going through your mind pre-season?
Well, yeah, exactly what you guys are talking about. It. Obviously, I would have we put a lot of in-depth analysis into what we thought we would be capable of, but there was just so much unknown. It was really tough, and I was very similar to you guys. As a club internally, we try to give ourselves some reasonable targets to try and achieve, and some stretch targets, but even that was really tough. So in the end, we were saying let's aim to be in and around fighting for the eight late in the season, and we think that would be acceptable for us.
Yeah, and from a player's point of view, Woosh, so what's sort of really surprised you from a positive sense when you're looking at, obviously, you had a really young team last year, and probably Tip and Woody, Zach Merritt last year, but what, as you integrated this team, what are the players that have really pleasantly surprised you in relation to their performance this year?
I think that it's not that they've surprised us, but their continued growth, with players like Tip and Woody, after, you know, he burst on the scene last year, to see that he's consolidated as a forward player for us. Everyone loved him off half-back last year. So we've challenged him in a new role where we felt he was going to make us a better team. Fantasia's continued growth has been outstanding, and even the growth of Joe Danaher taking, you know, his steps forward to become one of the really key big men in the game. So you put that alongside Zach Merritt, and he's maintained his really strong leadership within the group, even with all those senior players coming back. That's probably been the cornerstone of it. So there's others. Connor McKenna coming through. You know, he didn't start in the team at the beginning of the year. He had to work his way into the team, and there was a lot of doubt on how he was going at the start. And he's really worked hard to become another key player for us.
Woosh, are you pleased you took over the job? I know when Paul Little and the boys jumped on the private jet and then went over and saw you, I think, was it at Adelaide? You know, you must have had some mixed feelings at the time. But looking back on that decision and the massive job to take over Essendon's senior coaching role, you must be so pleased now that you accepted that opportunity.
Yeah, obviously I was rabid. It certainly wasn't a light decision. It was a lot to weigh up personally and professionally in terms of taking on the role, but you know, I have been really pleased with the way the whole club has worked together to get the club to rebound. So obviously our big role in the footy department has been the on-field performances and the way we present our product to our supporters and fans and to the general AFL community. But the whole club, in terms of our membership and marketing and all our corporate support, it's been a really tight-knit group working through it all together. So I've been really impressed with the way everyone has just been so focused on doing that without getting carried away with anything in particular.
Don't be modest, Woosher. It's all you, mate. Enjoy the sunshine. Hey, and on an injury front, it's obviously the team's been challenged this year from a physical perspective, sort of coming back from the year out. And Michael Hurley last week went down with a calf injury. How's he tracking for next week? Will you wrap him up in cotton wool, or would you like to get him out there against Freo?
I'd love to have him out there against Freo. So that'll be a medical decision, obviously.
Are you expecting him to be available?
Well, he's pretty up and about saying, I'm only going to miss 1 week. They're not ruling me out for two, but he doesn't have that say. If he can prove it, that's fine. Obviously, we'll select him, but he's got to get through the hoops of showing that he's fit to go. So unsure at this stage whether he'll be right or not. As I said, he's pretty bullish about it, but we'll wait and see.
And Josh Green hurt his foot last night, I think.
Yeah, that looks like it's serious. He's off to get some scans tomorrow morning on that. But he fractured a bone in his foot up in Brisbane a few years ago and had that pinned. And there's a possibility this is the same thing in the other foot. So we'll get that confirmed tomorrow. But it's not looking that great at this stage for him.
I know when you put your team on paper, it doesn't always pan out the way that it looks. But did you get a feeling pre-season? Because it's funny, when I read your team on a weekly basis, it's a really well-balanced team. So when you were putting it together in your best 22 maybe pre-season, did you get that feeling that the good tools, the speed at either end, the inside-out mids, did it look as good on paper as it's perhaps panned out on form during the course of the season?
I reckon it did, yeah. But a lot of it was obviously based around Hurley and Hooker and Collier and Heppel and these returning players that we were unsure about how they were going to hold up and perform throughout the season. So that was always that doubt, that we liked the balance and we liked the look of it. How's it going to pan out? We obviously weren't sure about where Connor McKenna would take his game to. We had young Andy McGrath that we were hopeful would break into the team fairly early, but you don't know exactly what impact they'll have. So there were still some question marks, whether Josh Green would be in our best team and how he would work in with the guys up there. We didn't have James Stewart in the lineup at the start of the year. He had to earn his spot and work pretty hard to grab that. So there's a lot that has happened throughout the year that probably wasn't in our initial planning, but we're wrapped with the way it's all come about. So I think the guys that I'm talking about that have come in and excited us have taken guys that were, we were expecting to play a similar role anyway. So there's been no great surprises.
Wishy, can you play AFL Commissioner just for 1 second? Talking to Roos about this throughout the week, the pre-finals bye. If you were Gillon McLachlan, would you scrap the pre-finals bye or do you think it's a good idea and you should keep it?
Well, up until last week, I would have said, just scrap it, make it even, just everyone flow into the finals. But when Fantasia and Hurley went down, I think it's a wonderful idea.
It's a good way to finish, Woosher. You've got Fremantle next week back here at Etihad at 110. You win that, you are finals bound. It's been a remarkable bounce back. Still a game to go. We thank you very much for joining us. Good luck next week.
Good on you guys. Thank you.
There you go, Johnny Worsfold. Done a remarkable job, Jay-Z, given difficult, trying circumstances.
Yeah, I didn't have them in my eight this year.
Oh, someone did in the box.
Yeah. Experience and stability, Roosie, like the importance, it's almost like him coming in was similar to you coming in to Melbourne, I reckon. Just someone to come in, unite the footy club, some experience, stability. He's been a great success, I think.
Oh, look, he's done a fantastic job. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think when he originally took the job was pre those players actually getting suspended. Yep. So when he actually took the job, he wouldn't have known exactly what he was in for. But, and I think that's why when you're looking at coaches, someone like John Worsfold, I guess that's why I'm probably surprised, Choco Williams, hasn't got another gig or the succession plan hasn't been more in vogue because, someone like John brings a presence. He brings an understanding of how to manage people. He brings success with him. Mm-hmm. And when things go a little bit awry, as they do at all footy clubs, no one could foresee what was going to happen at Essendon, I guess, at that time. But don't underestimate that stability and the confidence that everyone then has in John to be able to do the job, get through a really difficult year, and then to put the team back together again.
So some big games today. Obviously, we're covering the Saints taking on the Kangaroos. Richmond playing for a top four spot if they beat Fremantle later today. But we're going to focus, boys, on what happens next week. It's the round 23 fixture. We're going to work through tip and possible margin. And then Jay-Z's got the finals projector.
Got the computer.
And we're going to come up with a finals top eight ladder at the end of it. Big one starts on Friday night, boys. Etihad Stadium. Hawthorn taking on the Bulldogs.
Interesting game. Luke Hodges' last game plus Bob Murphy's last game. Whether Boyd plays or not last game. Gibson won't be playing, obviously, so there'll be a bit of a send-off. Like, there's a lot of emotion around this game.
Should Boyd play?
I'm not a subscriber to just giving games for send-offs. I'm not. If you can't make the finals, it doesn't mean anything. Mathematically, at that time, they won't be... The Bulldogs still can if everything goes right for them. So It depends on that. But if that was the case, they couldn't, then I would play him. And let's be honest, if he's fit, I still think he's in their best.
I agree.
He's still in their best side. So it's not exactly just handing him a game.
I don't think you're handing him a game.
But if he's fit, yes.
Who are you tipping?
Right now, I know the Hawks lost on the weekend, as did the Bulldogs, but right now...
He's putting a lot of thought into it this year, isn't he?
Probably go the Hawks.
Right. Yeah, I'm Bulldogs.
Jay?
Bulldogs.
All right. There we go. Two for the Bulldogs. I think the Bulldogs will beat Hawthorn too. Their percentage is a lot worse off too. The next game, Collingwood-Melbourne, MCG.
Well, Melbourne need to win it, so you'd think. And it looked like, listen to Nathan Buckley, did they say Taylor Adams mightn't play next week? Wells is unlikely to play next week. Brody Grundy will come back in. Mason Cox has actually done a really good job. So you would think...
Melbourne's got the wood over Collingwood.
Yeah, you would think that. Yeah, you'd think Melbourne would win that game.
Melbourne for me.
All right, all around. Next game, Brisbane take on North. No influence there. Sydney take on the Blues.
Well, there isn't. No, there is a...
For bottom.
And Brisbane, North get beat today, which we all think they will. Then if they lose that game to Brisbane next week, I think Brisbane will win. Then North Melbourne get the wooden spoon.
Which would be a good thing for the footy club, I reckon. Hmm.
It will be. Sydney to beat the Blues by how much will be the question, but they can't go into the top four.
Well, they can.
Sydney can.
If Richmond lose.
So we'll go over that. I think Sydney will win that by... And I'm not saying... I don't want to be disrespectful to Carlton, but I saw Sydney play Freo last week, last game of the season, nothing to play for Carlton. That's a 10-goal to 15-goal win to Sydney.
Agree.
Port Adelaide take on the Gold Coast at the Adelaide Oval Saturday night.
Port. And that's why it's going to be interesting, because percentage is going to be between these two teams. So, again, no disrespect for the Gold Coast, but that's another 10-goal to 15-goal victory. So percentage is going to become massive between those two teams.
And potentially for that top four spot. So if Richmond lose, the difference between fourth and fifth spot is huge and separated only at the moment by 1%.
Essendon to play finals, boys, if they beat Fremantle next week.
And they'll beat them.
Yep.
All right, Tigers take on St Kilda.
Tigers for Richmond. Me.
I think on form, Richmond, but that's going to be Rui's farewell, and that's a big game. On form, you'd have to go with Richmond.
West Coast host the Adelaide Crows, final game of round 23. What does Don Pike do?
Well, I think given the bye the following week, unless the doctor says there's a certain player that would 2 weeks would make a big difference compared to 1 week, then you don't play them. But if the doctor says, look, yeah, they're 90% fit, they've got the weekend off next week, you play them.
You don't want to go into finals having lost your last two games. Adelaide will want to win that game. It'll be a dress rehearsal, Swatter.
Yep.
It'll be flat out knowing you've got the bye the next week. That's why it's there, and that's why you can do that. And they'll want to have a good win. Also, and I know these coaches don't say they look back, and players don't. West Coast are the team that stuffed their top four chances last year, albeit at home for them last year. They'll want to go up there and have a really good win leading into the final. So Adelaide for me.
There's one more really important game, and this could decide the top couple of teams also. The Cats take on the Giants at Simmons Stadium.
Flip of the coin, I reckon. This one maybe being down at Geelong might make it hard for GWS fellas, but who did you tip?
GWS for me.
Yeah, GWS for me.
Oh, interesting, because they're going to play again potentially the next week. So do you want the
top eight? You've plugged your numbers in. Give us the final top eight at the end of the year.
So off the majority of what people said there and who wins, who will play who and where, because I want to know where I'm going to be on that Saturday.
Well, the ladder goes Adelaide in first, then GWS, Richmond in third, and Geelong in fourth, then Port Adelaide fifth, Sydney sixth, Melbourne 7th, and Essendon rounding out the 8. So that is the ladder. These will be the matchups then. It'll be Adelaide versus Geelong in the first final at Adelaide Oval. Then Port Adelaide, the other one is GWS versus Richmond. So that game will be played at Spotless. So even though Richmond's got 70,000 fans, they'll all cram into a Spotless
stadium. And that'll probably be a Friday night game?
Would be, because Adelaide would be the Thursday night game.
That'll be the Thursday. And the reasoning for that, for people that don't know, and from what I understand, is that Adelaide people, Thursday night, Monday night, if it was a Wednesday afternoon, they would go to Adelaide Oval. Yeah. Whereas Sydney side is Swatter. Mm. probably tend to...
Saturday night operators.
Might venture out on a Thursday night, but will most certainly on a Friday night.
So they're the two qualifying finals, Adelaide versus Geelong and GWS versus Richmond. The two elimination finals are Port Adelaide versus Essendon, again at Adelaide Oval, and then Sydney Swans versus Melbourne, which will be a really tough challenge.
So it's all going to be... Melbourne. So all the finals are going to be in Adelaide and Sydney.
Jump on the plane, mate.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Yep. just on the Cats, Dangerfield, boys. Outstanding second half yesterday. Selwood missing, obviously. Can the Cats do serious damage off the back of Paddy Dangerfield? It's a risky strategy, Roosie. Not that it's
a strategy. Yeah, it is. I mean, look, Geelong are a hard one to pick, aren't they? Yep. They're so reliant on Dangerfield, so reliant on Selwood, so reliant on... I mean, all the top teams are, Duck, you know, relying on their best players. There's no question about that. But you still look at Geelong and you still look at some pretty big holes in the boat. I mean, yesterday, if it wasn't for Paddy Dangerfield, you know, Collingwood would have beaten them. But Paddy Dangerfield's in their team. That's why they're paying him, and that's why he's the best player in the competition.
I would say that's okay in home and away footy. But in finals, and you look at teams that win grand finals, and go back to when you won your grand final, Roosie, and played in those grand finals, you didn't rely on anyone. The Bulldogs don't rely on anyone. That's what I love about Richmond this year. They don't rely on any one individual. Yes, Dusty Martin's having a great year. Yes, Cochin's been a great captain. Yes, Rance is arguably the best defender. But do they absolutely rely on those guys having blinders every week? No.
It's more the defence than the pressure up forward.
That's right. So, you know, I think premiership teams don't have a heavy reliance on, and that's my concern about Geelong.
I think, Duck, on that, I 100% agree. I always say it's the bottom six players that determine who wins the grand final. Because generally the stars cancel themselves out. You know, three will play well, three will have an okay game, three will play poor. Yeah, you look at the history of the guys that jump up in grand finals, it's generally your bottom five that will determine the outcome of finals and grand finals.
So as a coach, just on that, as a coach, is it... Do you put more emphasis on getting to those guys to letting them know just how important they are in those games?
Well, I think, Duck, when I'm looking at the finals, you're looking at teams that, as you said, don't necessarily rely on the stars to win. So what you're looking at is the one-man-in, one-man-out scenario. Who plays their role? Who really understands their role? So if there is an injury in the finals, as we can see there would be, who's going to be less affected by that injury? And I think that's the difference for me. When you look at Sydney playing at the moment, I don't think they're playing fantastic, but what they are, everyone's playing their role. Mm. Yeah, everyone knows exactly what to do. But when you look at Geelong, you don't see the same thing when you watch a game of football. You see Dangerfield kick a goal from, and I'm not suggesting the Franklin goal is not similar, but stars are going to do great things. What you see when Sydney play, I didn't think Adelaide lost any friends the other night from the way, you touched on
it.
It was a great game. They just kicked poorly. Yeah. When you watch Adelaide play, you see everyone doing their role. When you watch, I think the Giants are starting to get that back. So for me, they're the three teams that, you know, I have out in front. Now, I know it's going to depend on when Sydney finishes, but Geelong, you just think they just are reliant on, you know, a Selwood
big performances by
big performances. Yeah. You know,
that's saying, Roosie. I mean, you look at this club and all it's achieved over the past decade. I think 9 top 4 finishes over the past 11 years. So they've turned over nearly their whole list in that time. So I think it's a huge credit to that football club. And Sydney's very similar, obviously.
I know
you're not being critical, but I reckon it's worth saying in the same conversation.
I agree. I think Geelong, Hawthorn, Sydney have been amazing. I guess when I talk about the teams, I'm looking at the here and the now. Geelong's been amazing at, even getting Dangerfield back there and the young players. I mean, they've got a lot of young players playing as well. Everyone's talked about the number of young players Sydney have got. Yeah. Look at all the young players who are running around for Geelong yesterday. They've had a lot of injuries. So they've overcome a lot of different things. They just do it slightly differently to the way some other teams do it.
At the other end, the Bulldogs may miss out on playing finals. What's gone wrong?
Doug and I have spoken about it before, and this is not a criticism again. They had an unbelievable season last year, and they had an amazing month. I don't think I've seen a team play at or around 100% for as long as what they did last year. Yeah. They had just about every player, Duck, and their team playing as close to 100% as I've seen a team. And over the course of the sort of two-year period, I think I've touched them. We played them one day here at Etihad, not last year, the year before. We couldn't get near them. We couldn't get the ball off them. We couldn't move the ball. I think it's just they haven't been able to sustain it, Swatter. They just haven't been able to sustain that unbelievable patch of form and performance they had over a couple of years.
Yeah, and I think people forget, Swatter, because they were so dominant in that four games, in those finals, that we forget that they did finish seventh.
Yep.
You know, and they did, but it's the way they lost last year in comparison to how they've lost this year. They just that real manic, absolute attack on the footy, attack on the man with the footy, wasn't as consistent this year. And look, last year they had a lot of injuries as well.
Yep.
Because going into this year, when you added Murphy, Suckling, they added Cloak, Redpath coming back from knee injury this year. So yeah, all of a sudden you looked at their list and you said, they are automatically better. They're a grand final team that have added to their list. They are better. Ling Jong was the other one who got injured this year, but he had a great start to the year. So they're automatically going to be better than last year. Then they got some injuries. I don't think they've ever got their forward line quite balanced enough.
Boyd and Cloak
obviously having, you know, personal issues. So a lot has gone wrong again. But I think in terms of even who they have put out on the park, just that absolute die for every contest wasn't there.
Yeah, well, they've got a chance next week. They take on the Hawks. They win that. They have to win it if they're a chance.
Wallace was the other one that came in this year.
Cramery too, but he got injured as well.
Yeah. So,
it hasn't gone their way, the Bulldogs. Roosie, this is where we like to sit back, put on the kettle, get a nice cup of soy mocha, sit back, put the slippers on, and you just recount some of your famous stories.
Gather round, boys and girls.
Because I'm a bad boy.
It's story time with Roosie.
A bad boy for love.
All right, Roosie. What year and where are we starting?
So we're going to 96. So Duck touched on it before. The smell of finals was a bit in the air this morning. We've been through the permutations about what may or may not happen. Beautiful day today. The grass, everyone's out starting to mow the lawns. It's just about to tick over into September and we're all getting a bit excited. So I thought I'd take it back to 1996. And I know you blokes won't argue about this because it was a reasonably good year for the Kangas. But being a Fitzroy boy, played there for 13 years, hadn't played in the grand final. So we go to the 96 prelim and we'll start with that. We're playing against Essendon at the MCG. And the week leading up to that was all about Plugger's groin. It was the biggest story in football at the time. I think he'd missed the last game of the year or maybe the first final. And we'd got over Hawthorn by about 2 or 3 points. It was when one played 8, 2 played 7. Yep. I don't know, you guys finished top or did we finish top?
You finished top.
Yeah, we finished top. So we played Hawthorn, just beat them, I think without Plugger, snuck into the grand final. So the huge story all week leading into the 96 prelim final about Plugger's groin, Plugger's groin, Plugger's groin, Plugger's groin. And those of you, well, the Swans fans remember the game, and I'm sure you guys would have sat back and watched that as well. So Plugger took a mark about 60 metres out as the siren was about to go. And, of course, the commentators thought, well, Plugger's groin's been pretty ordinary all week. You know, will he make the distance? Will he make the distance? I remember I was playing centre back and sort of ran up behind Plugger thinking, and I was thinking probably the same thing, you know, will he make the distance? Because, and then he shaped for the drop punt and I thought, gee, this is, yeah, because we only needed a point. It was a draw at that particular time. So I was a little bit worried when he shaped to go for the drop punt. But I must admit, as soon as he laced it, I didn't actually know whether it was a goal or a point. But I knew it was heading in the right direction. I knew it was going to get there. And then, of course, the excitement and, you know, how great it was, you know, winning the game, you know, first grand final.
Because he would have loved the fact that you all jumped on him
and absolutely
smothered the ball.
Who do you reckon was the first one there? Luffy. Luffy was the first one.
What did Plugger say after the game? Or is he like, did he get up in the jubilation? Or was he quite calm about it?
No, he's very calm. I mean, he's very considered. And look, he would have been unbelievably confident. There's no doubt. I mean, he was, as we all know, the best kick for goal. You know, he's just such a good kick for goal. And you could sense the confidence when he kicked it. So, yeah, then there's, as these boys know, there's excitement, particularly for us, you know, and me having played at that stage for 14 years and never played in the grand final was just the whole excitement of the week. And then the week turned a little bit pear-shaped because I think Andrew Dunkley had been reported for, was it Hurdy? I can't remember who it was because it's going back a fair while now. So that became a massive issue and then eventually he was free to play. But I think at the time, we probably didn't realise the emotional toll it took on Andrew. And I must admit, I was probably more than anyone. Everyone was hoping he's playing, but I was hoping more than anyone because if he hadn't played, I would have played on Duck. So I was actually really... I gave him a lift to the airport, picked him up on the way
can
back.
Can I be really honest? Witness. Can I be really honest, though? I really wanted him to play.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want him to be out, and that's no disrespect
to
him.
No, exactly. Yeah.
I just really... Because for me, preparing for the game, I knew what I was going to get.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we played you guys.
I know it's going to be Dunkley.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
you've beaten us
twice that year.
We played it. Actually, my 300th game that year was at Princess Park. Yeah, I think we won by 10 goals or something like that. Smacked us at the MCG too.
Yeah, so Plugger had kicked one goal at half time and ended up with 10.
Yeah, that's
got his 100.
And I'm sure you didn't remind Mick at all, did you?
Mick blamed me because I told Plugger that he was wearing fake 10. So Mick reckons he had no respect for it.
What did Mick say?
That had happened earlier that year. So Mick had blamed the 9 goals in the second half on the plugger had no respect for
it. Nothing to do with his play.
No, nothing.
So the week leading it was tough, and it was really hard on Andrew, and then obviously flying down and going in the parade, and it's funny because Johnny Blakey, my good mate, and I remember we started the top end of Flinders near the what's the centre there called, the art centre or whatever.
Yeah,
it's called.
You start on
and
St Kilda Road.
You blokes were getting in the cars first. And I remember looking over at Johnny, but Pago had none of that. So, yeah, he wouldn't let any of you blokes look. And I'm trying to wave to Johnny, and Johnny's got his head down because he didn't want to cut the wrath of Pago. So you blokes had sunnies on.
Yeah. Yeah. We weren't allowed to wear sunnies.
He didn't let you wear sunnies.
No, wouldn't let them speak or look at us or anything like that. So
the speech after the presentation about the Hollywood superstars with the sunnies on at Old Parliament House was quite extraordinary.
Yeah, so there obviously excitement around the game, and probably the things that stand out for me is running on the ground before the game. Like, I was actually a player that would always go to a grand final. I couldn't understand why some players didn't, but that was my craft. That's where I wanted to be. And I must admit, when I turned up at Sydney, because they were on the bottom of the ladder, I got there in 95, Plugger got there, which was fantastic. I didn't really think I'd play in a grand final. So to play in 96, so running on the ground, the crowd, going through the banner was unbelievable. And then the start of the game, you know, when the ball's bounced, it's just, it's hard to put into words how exciting that was. And the other key moments, I guess, probably before, we were actually about 3 or 4 up from memory. And
I think it might have been a bit quarter time.
Well, Kel came out of the centre at one stage. We might have been 4
just
up.
Just missed Plugger.
Just missed Plugger. Just bounced in front of him. And it was a Glenn Freeborn when it kicked the goal.
Three goals in the second quarter.
And that's what we're talking about before. Those players that bob up in grand finals. So I think we went in at halftime, maybe just in front.
Mm-hmm. 2 points.
But you could sense at halftime. I didn't realise Andrew Dunkley was exhausted. The amount of energy, emotional energy, grand final week, having to go to the tribunal. And to be fair, even though we played well, the best team won on the day. I mean, and I guess when you get to a grand final and you can at least say that, I thought the most disappointing thing, it was a cracking game for about 3 quarters. And then you guys, I was probably disappointed at the final result. It was a closer game than that.
Way closer.
Yeah, way closer than that. But the final margin probably didn't
43
reflect.
43 points.
Yeah, the final margin definitely didn't reflect the closeness of the game. And then I had my good mate Johnny Blakey tagging me for the last quarter and grabbing hold of my jumper. And I said to him once, I said, Johnny, I don't have to belt you. He goes, Dennis said to me, you can't touch the ball anymore. He told me at 3 quarter time. So he's running around just hanging on to my jumper for the whole last quarter. But look, it's the best day of your life, footy life. I want to make that clear. Best day of your footy life and the worst day of your footy life in one day. When you're playing the grand final and you lose the grand final. But I think when I look back as a club, I don't think we were ready to win a premiership then. I think it was probably having played in it and then having some success under Rocket and then winning in 2005.
It was a remarkable year, though.
Yeah, it was.
96 yeah, for the 96, club. Yeah. That was Rocket's first year as senior
Rocket's
coach,
first
wasn't
year,
it?
Yeah. Well, and we played some cracking footy. Princess Park against you guys. Some unbelievable. SCG against Geelong. I think they had 46,000. They had about 5,000 at the Sydney Football Stadium watching it on the ground. So it really put the club on the map with Plugger, but probably wouldn't have been able to capitalise. If we'd have won the grand final as a club, I don't think we were ready to cope with
Mickey
it as
O
a footy
was 17,
club.
I think, that
yeah,
year.
Mickey O was really young.
And at that point, the most watched grand final on TV at that point because Sydney were in Sydney, the grand final.
So who had the best day out of you three boys? I'm just going to run down some stats quickly. Schwatter, 25 possessions.
Got off to a bad start. Can you believe this, that I let Troy Luff kick two on me in the first 10 minutes? Message
ideal.
Came out. I can't say it on radio, but it was along these lines. Do something or else you're off. So I put one on his chin.
Yeah.
Won the granny and got 6 weeks.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, in that 25 possessions, just a 5-handball shot up at 20 kicks.
Right, mate, what was the game plan, Jay?
Kick
it long to the bloke inside 50.
The duck, 22 possessions, 9 marks duck, 4 scoring shots, just a 1-goal 3. So the radar was a little bit off, but clearly...
How many possessions?
22.
22 and 9. Jeez, imagine if Senar Ford's out there got that. That amount of the pill on a day, Roosie.
And then Roosie, despite Johnny Blakey tag, 25 possessions, 14 kicks, 11 handballs, 6 marks for yourself. So the three of you, I think, have performed very well.
You make a good point, though, because Glenn Freeborn's 3 goals turned the game
did.
Towards our favour. The contributions of Matty Capuano, Peter Bell, Adam Simpson through the course of the year were really important
just
for
us. Just on Freo's 3 goals, I remember them well, because those 3 balls got kicked to me, and his opponent and mine and another one all came to me, and Glenn just sat exactly where he's meant to sit. You make the ball come to ground, and he roved it like he should and snapped goals, and that's as simple as it was. But he was brilliant, and he went in, and he even says this, a ripping bloke for our, actually might be going fishing with him in October with the other little bloke, Anthony Rock.
Oh, good luck with that.
Who, that'll be
good fun.
Could
have got Norm Smith that day, Rocky.
Yes,
played a good game of footy
and got knocked. Paul Kelly knocked him out at the start of the game. He knocked him clean out.
Did he?
25 touches.
He was brilliant. Other point I'm trying to bring up, right. So he went in at half time thinking, I might win the Norm Smith. That's exactly what he started to think. He tells you, he goes, I'm going to win it. Didn't touch it for the second
half. Would have won it. I think Arch won it.
Yeah, it was a very,
a surprise.
It was one of those years. Corey McKernan was good.
Yeah, Corey McKernan, I remember, was
good.
You
could have thrown a blanket over half the team.
Yeah.
All right, we've got to take a break. Great story, Roosie. It was a great ending for us. Not so good for you guys, but it was a great effort in 96 to make the grand final. Big game of footy for the Saints. It's Nick Riewoldt's last game in front of his home crowd. And they take on the Kangaroos, and they have been at the forefront of opening up their club from a media perspective. And Mickey Roberts is in the rooms right now, and he is with Lukey McDonald. Robbo, thanks to Bob Jane T-Marts.
Thank you, Swatter. And isn't it fantastic for Triple M to be able to talk to Sam Gilbert, who's playing today, and then to come into the rooms here at North Melbourne. And we're speaking to Luke McDonald, and I'll tell you what, there's music going. I don't know whether I'm at the Metro, the Dome, or Inflation or whatever, but Triple M rocks football. But with regards to you, you started off half-backs, gone into the wing, and I reckon the target now is to put you through the midfield. Is that a fair call?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Start of the year in defence in the whole pre-season there. I think Mark McCrae kicked 3 goals in 5 minutes in the first game, and I got moved on all wing, and absolutely loved playing there, and hopefully I can sneak inside at some point over the next couple of weeks, but if not, next year.
I know Jack Siebel is in charge of the music down here, and he's a big in, actually. He's had that turf toe. Actually, I didn't think he was going to play, but he's such a determined bugger. He's back out there.
Yeah. Well, he's our skipper. He's the heart and soul of the side. So absolutely fantastic to come in and play today. You know, we weren't sure if he was going to get up for the rest of the year, but, he was so determined to play. I'm not sure about some of his music sometimes, but at the moment it's been all right.
Luke, obviously saw you guys live and play last week, and caught up with you when you had your bacon and egg roll before the game. And I'm not sure if you caught a glimpse of Jay-Z's plate, but it was absolutely massive.
There's a bit going on there,
So, mate, just with 2 games to go, obviously can't play finals. What should we look at today when we're looking at the North Melbourne Footy Club? What's Scotty really trying to focus on for the last couple of games?
I think you'd know, Roosie, that with a young side, you just got to finish the year really well and launch into the pre-season. That's been the major focus. You know, if we don't play well these last couple of games, you know, it's probably going to bring a negative theme into the pre-season. And I think we've been really competitive this year. We've been able to debut over 10 guys and another couple of young guys are playing today. So, yeah, really excited to get out there. And you know, obviously Saints still have a glimmer of hope of playing finals and, you know, we want to ruin that.
Yeah, it's been a funny year for you guys, hasn't it? I mean, you've been better than a five-win team. I mean, you've been really, really competitive throughout the course of the season. So I suppose the balance between the negative and the positive reviews all year has been a real sit on the sort of swinging on the fence, hasn't it, for Scotty? So has it been pretty positive, though, as a general rule?
Oh, absolutely. You know, just... Obviously, we lost a lot of older guys last year, and this year I know we haven't been as successful on the field, but it's been just such a good environment, so much energy. Like, on a Monday, you wouldn't even know if we'd lost. The music's pumping, the lockers are banging, and, yeah, it's just a great place to be around. Obviously, I think we've had five losses under a goal, but, you know, we've just got so much experience out of those games, and it was good, I suppose, to beat Melbourne a couple of weeks ago in a close one, just to show that we've learnt from those, and... yeah, it's been even though we haven't got the wins, it's been a really positive year.
Congratulations, Lukey, on your season. I think you've been excellent all year for the Roos. But can you tell me about one of your mates, Toddy Goldstein? He was quiet again last week. Has probably had a pretty poor year. And I just looked at him on the siren last week. And to me, he looked like a really disappointed and dejected, a forlorn figure. How's Toddy travelling? Because he's clearly not in the same All-Australian form that he was, say, 2 years ago.
Yeah, obviously he was disappointed last week. You know, he takes a lot of pride in his performance and he's had a big week on the track. You know, he's done a lot this week and really looking forward to him bouncing back this week. You know, when he's at his best, he's an absolute superstar and it's good to have Braden Prusin as well, who's just an absolute monster. So, yeah, it'll be good to have those two play together, but we're really looking forward to... I think Toddy, you'll probably start in the ruck and really hoping to get a big lift out of him today.
What is it for him? What has he been working on, Luke? What are the things? You know, is he sort of covering the ground or in the ruck or he's marking? You know, what are these things that he needs to improve on?
Oh, well, the marking, you know, just makes such a presence when the big man takes a big mark in a contest. You know, really gets the ball forward and yeah, I'm hoping he can take a few big marks today and really get us forward because, you know, we get so much momentum and confidence out of that when Toddy's playing well and taking those big marks.
Hey, Luke, always interested into the mindset of the current day footballer. Been a lot of speculation about the senior coach this week. And I know back when we were playing the locker room talk, if, you know, there was rumours Dennis was going, we were all sort of going, well, we hope so. that's only a joke. He was a big part and the only reason why we had success. But has there been any locker room talk about the speculation around the coach?
Nah, look, I'm being honest. It hasn't been any at all. There's been no banter or anything, nothing thrown towards Brad. But... yeah, I think he's said it as many times as he possibly can. He wants to be a North Melbourne coach, and as long as the board and all that want him. I know the playing group definitely want him. We love the way he goes about it. We love his knowledge of the game and absolutely love playing for him. So, yeah, well, we're all hoping he's a North Melbourne coach next year, and I'm very sure that he will be.
Young fella, we had Taylor Adams on the band line a few weeks ago talking about the music that he listens to before the game. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what the type of music is? That's the first question. And after you answer that, I'll ask you the second question.
Well, I'm not majorly into the music. You won't see me walking around with the big headphones on, listening to the big doof doof or anything. But if you walk down into the rooms and you had your eyes closed, you'd think it's a nightclub.
yeah, what is this?
I don't know, mate. I have no idea. There's so many resident DJs in the side. Obviously, Jack Skipper, he runs it all, but guys like Ryan Clark really, really rate their taste in music. And yeah, I just sort of go with the flow. I don't really care if it's Coldplay or Listen Esso or anybody. I'll just listen to it and nod my head.
And can you name a Rose Tattoo song?
A Rose Tattoo? I'm going to be honest, I've never heard of Rose Tattoo.
Well, I tell you what, Luke, just for your listening pleasure, sit back, close your eyes and cop a load of this.
Some fool tried to hold me down. I got drunk and I ripped up the town. I'm a bad boy. A bad boy for love.
He's loving it.
Oh my God. Who's singing that?
That's Roosie, Lukey. Oh, okay. And I tell you what, if that doesn't have you fired up for a massive game today, something's wrong.
Yeah, if I go all right today, I'm going to ask for that soundtrack, Roosie, and I have chucked it in my pregame.
I might come in the rooms next week and sing it for you blokes.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good. We'll keep you to that.
Hey, just before we let you go, you're not turning up just to go out there and, you know, do the best. You're coming here. You've got two games to go. You want to finish off on a good note. How do you beat the Saints?
Obviously, they're a very good contested ball side. You know, they're really good at pressuring, so we're just going to have to absorb that pressure and get it forward. And, you know, if we can get one-on-one contests out of Benny Brown and maybe Jackie Zeeble sneaking forward, I think we're going to be a really red-hot crack. We're really confident and we're really looking forward to ruining Rui's day.
All right, Luke, we appreciate you joining us. And also a big thanks to the Kangaroos Media Department, Heath O'Loughlin there, just opening up the doors. Good luck today.
No worries. Thanks for having me, boys.
There you go. Lukey McDonald still shaking his head at Roosie's rose tattoo impersonation. It's gone global, Roosie. It's viral.
Just a quick one, fellas. Oh, do you think Brad Scott will be there next year?
I've got no idea.
Just sniff the wind, Forrester.
Okay. Well, we discussed this earlier in the year on Talking Footy, and I'm assuming the other footy shows discussed it as well. Roosie, I'm sure you guys have. I don't see why another club would be necessarily, and this is no disrespect to Brad, but given what he's done and where he's at with the Kangaroos, why all of a sudden he's wanted by other clubs. I just don't get it. And then all this speculation, I get it if he'd won a premiership and the Kangaroos were sitting, you know, in fifth position and doing whatever else. But I think he's committed to the North Footy Club. And I agree, if there was an inkling that North were thinking, okay, well, we don't really want to commit to you for another 3 or 4 years, then what we spoke about before with Roosie, in that if that was the case, that they're a little bit unsure going forward for the next 3 or 4 years, because that's how long it's going to take with North, then right now might be the absolute perfect time for him if he wants to be a career coach. I would say that. So then it comes down to the individual and what he wants to do for the rest of his coaching career.
I just say to Rod, make sure you go and eyeball guys like Gehrig and Hamill and Robert Harvey, Lenny Hayes, Maxie Hutchins, Stephen Baker, Brett Foss, these type of guys. Get them in a room and apologise to them. I just think it's just abhorrent that you have a team that were just a poof ninth off getting into a grand final in 2004 and 2005, 6 points against Port. They went out and smashed Brisbane the next year, week, and then Sydney the following year. And you need everything to go well. Winning papers, wallpapers over a lot of cracks, and I think you can say categorically that the Rod Butters era, there was a lot of cracks, but the winning masked over all this bullshit. Rod was very lucky to get a couple of reserves games at St Kilda in the late 70s. Then he becomes very successful in business and uses a club as his toy. I don't cop the sorry. I'm sorry. I don't forgive him for 1 minute.
For Kotai, this is the Triple M Footy Preview. Kotai, the right gear when you need it. Strong comments from former St Kilda champion and captain Danny Frawley. And Rod Butters has been kind enough to jump on the line. Butters, welcome. You've just heard the comments from former St Kilda champ Danny Frawley on SEN. Thanks for joining us. Your response to what Spud had to say is pretty fired up.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? A great pleasure to be on, guys, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about what is a massive issue in society and a real problem. And so I appreciate the opportunity. Look, I don't have a single problem with Sputter's comments. I think they're ill-conceived. I think he's terribly, terribly ignorant. And ignorance is the very thing that keeps man in everlasting, you know, caveman troglodyte status. But, you know, Danny's paid a few hundred dollars a week to get on radio and be controversial, and I respect that. I'm actually very grateful that Danny keeps talking about it, because this is the very thing that we need to elevate the conversation. Do you know, last year in Victoria, nearly 500 men and women died from heroin overdose. 500 people. You know, no more parents. Who's going to raise those children? We've got to talk about this mental health issue. And so I'm grateful for Danny to beat his own drum. He can be as disgusted as he likes. I would encourage him to keep talking about it.
So, Rod, to some people, they question the timing and the motivation. From your point of view, what's driving your decision to, you know, go back and talk about your own journey and what you've had to deal with and the situation you now find yourself in?
Well, it's very simple motivation. When 150 people die from heroin overdose, just 2 kilometres from our Premier's office, and he hasn't got the guts to build a safe injecting room because he's afraid of losing 1 or 2 votes. That's why. When 157,000 alcoholics are hospitalised every day in 1 year, I think it needs to be spoken about. When 5,554 deaths occurred in this country from alcoholism, someone's got to stand up and say why. And if that means that I get a little bit of criticism from someone like Danny Frawley, who sadly has never read anything but the back page of the Herald Sun. He's never gone online and had a look at the real social issues, the mental health issues. The man himself was in charge of 46 elite athletes, and he doesn't understand a single thing about the very thing, drugs, alcohol, and gambling that are destroying this nation. So I have no, that's why, guys, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, Rod, you and I spoke, and I don't think we'd ever met each other before. We spoke at the Elster McDog Park about 8 weeks ago, and I commend you for your honesty on that particular day. And I think it's sad that it's been brought into the football environment. I commend you for actually coming out and talking about it. So I hope we can leave it in that space. I don't know whether there's anything personal between you and Danny, but
no,
I think, I hope we do leave it in that space around what you're talking about, because it is an issue. I mean, Wayne and I are going to be involved in International Men's Day, which I actually didn't know was occurred. I think women are very, very good at talking about their feelings, helping each other out, and traditionally men aren't that great at it. So I certainly commend you for coming out, and I trust that your motives are honourable, as you and I have discussed. What are some of the things, Rod, from that point of view, that you'd like to see happen? Because I always talk about being a problem solver or creating problems. Hopefully you're in that space now of trying to solve those problems. What are the things that you really think need to happen, given what you've been through yourself?
Well, I think we've got to start talking about it. We've got to get out of the denial stage. We've got to get out of the cave. We've got to recognise that, you know, do you think I woke up one day and said, you know what, I think I'll become an alcoholic today and maybe a drug addict. That's a good idea. I think I'll destroy my life. I think I'll destroy the life of the people I care about. I think I'll destroy my businesses. Guys, that's not how it is. I have an illness. I have a mental health illness, and it's called addiction. I have sat with former AFL players and their wives who have been crippled with fear because they can't feed their children because their husband has got a gambling addiction. He learnt that gambling addiction at work. He happened to be an elite sportsman. That woman told me that when there is a knock at the door, she is crippled with fear because it's probably the sheriff and he's probably going to take the car or the microwave. She can't feed her children. Then they flick on the telly and they get told that they should go to Auskick, you know, but they can't afford the footy boots to get the kids to Auskick. And this is not uncommon. This is going on all around us. So why am I doing it? Because I want the powers to be at the AFL and I want the powers to be in Spring Street to wake up and say, you know what, we've had enough. The AFL takes $10 million a year from a gambling company. The AFL does not need that money. They don't need the money to pollute generations of children that are going forward that it's okay to gamble. Of every 100 gamblers, 20 have a problem. 20 have a problem. They often cannot feed their children. They can't turn up to work. It is not okay. We live in a civilized society. And
this is going on around us. And I'm just saying, guys, please, can we just wake up and start protecting our children?
Speaking with Rod Butters on Triple M Footy.
And I think it's a good time to point out that well done to North Melbourne for not having any pokies at their football club. So they're very much, well, separate to a lot of other clubs on that front. Just one question from me, Rod, or two. Are there any decisions you think that made that negatively impacted on St Kilda's premiership chances back in the day while you were president? And did you give any thought to stepping away while you... you know, confronted these issues?
Number one, I don't believe there were. I think that's a cheap shot. No, I'm not suggesting you're making a cheap shot. You're simply repeating what you heard. But look, I had a board of 9 people. I had 7 of those people were outstanding human beings. People like Mark Kellett, people like Ray King, Andrew Bassett, Jim Watts. Great people. So, you know, there's this horrible sort of sense that it was the Rod Butters show. I was 1 of 9. You don't think they held me in line and pulled my coat and told me when I had to pull my head in and et cetera, et cetera. Boards of qualified, capable people make decisions. To think that I could somehow have affected the on-field performance is just so stupid. It's ludicrous. My job was to set the strategy, to employ the chief executive, and to raise the money necessary to build a list, which I think most of you would agree was probably the envy of the AFL at the time, and to pay the players on time. The chief executive's job was to run the club. The coach's job was to coach the players, the medicos to keep them on the track, and the player's job was to get the footy and kick it through those big sticks. So to draw a conclusion, and I know Danny tried to, it's just so silly. Like, it's just so dumb.
We appreciate you taking the time to jump on the line and have a chat to us, Butters. We wish you well and all the best for the future.
Great to be with you guys, and thanks for the opportunity.
There we go, Rod Butters, the former president of the St Kilda Football Club. First time premiership points have been played in Ballarat at Mars Stadium, and Port Adelaide got it done. They were challenged certainly through the course of the game by the Bulldogs, but they got it done. Port Adelaide currently in fourth place, and a man who's playing a big role in their season so far is Ollie Wines, and he joins us on the line right now. Welcome to Triple M Footy, Ollie.
Thanks, guys.
Good win down there yesterday in Ballarat, and the Bulldogs certainly put it up to you.
Yeah, it certainly was. And look, first game in Ballarat, so it'll be a bit of a historic game for us. Obviously, we played in Shanghai and now the first in Ballarat. So that was special. And just to get the win like that, games for us this year have probably gone either way in those tight stages in the last quarters this year. And it was just so pleasing to get over the line and kick the last 5 in a row.
Congratulations, Ollie, because it secures you guys a finals berth. But were you feeling relieved just to play in this game in the first place? Because I personally thought you were pretty lucky to survive the MRP for that bump on Tommy Langdon last week. Did you think as soon as you bumped Tommy that you might be in some trouble for that?
Oh, initially, I probably didn't think I was in trouble. Probably the 12 hours after the game, I thought I'd get away with a fine, but I guess once it got handed down and we saw what happened to Redpath, and I was copping a little bit on Twitter and probably watched the incident about another 10 times, and I think I was really lucky. I think I went in every category of theirs, jumping, contact to the head with my shoulder. So, yeah, luckily enough for me, I got off, and hopefully I don't do something like that again.
So is it fair to say, Ollie, you're a bit confused like a lot of players on what is acceptable or not in terms of, you know, all these issues, the striking, the jumper punching, the bumping?
Yeah, I think so. And there's a certain inconsistency through the system. Look, I guess the AFL comes out and says they're probably targeting different things from week to week, and this probably changes their reviewing of incidents, I guess. So, yeah, I think we just need a bit more transparency on it, and it'd be just like to all the players, I guess, want to be on the same page.
Well done yesterday, Ollie, on a very good win against last year's premiers, and you've probably shored up a top 4 spot, which gives you a real opportunity now to, I guess, get rid of, you know, a few of the critics that believe that, you know, you can't beat teams in the top 8. Well, in a couple of weeks, guess what? You're going to have to, because there's only going to be a top 8 left. But I want to talk about Charlie Dixon yesterday. Quiet in the first half, but grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck in the second. Just so important when he's playing like that for your team.
Oh, certainly. I think Dicko's our barometer, and probably comes down to the mids. Probably early in the year, weren't kicking it to him well, and nowadays he's still wrestling with two defenders. He's got his own man, plus probably the spare opposition defender, and he's still clunking him. But we say to him, you want to see his hands. He's got the biggest hands you'll ever see, and we say you just got to use them a bit more, Dicko, because with the size of them, he'd be grabbing them one-handed out of there.
Yeah, I used to say the same thing to Corey McKernan, but and he did, and he could do it. But there were days where somehow those big mitts would go missing. And I know he always listened, so I thought he'd give him a message. Hey, young pal Pepper wasn't there yesterday. He was there.
Yeah, he was there.
I thought he was having a rest.
Before.
Okay, that was the week before. What's it been like having another player on the inside with you? Has it taken a bit of pressure off you, given that you play a similar style?
Yeah, certainly. And look, the workload Peps has had this year is enormous for an 18-year-old. He's sort of taken the burden of myself and probably Brad Ebert to sort of be that inside midfielder that's always providing a contest. And I guess the one non-negotiable Kenny's given Peps this year is to always make a contest, be tough in the contested situations, and just be a presence. And for an 18-year-old to come into a team and do that and probably lead it in a way has been really special.
Ollie, you guys have had a pretty good year, but I guess following from the Ducks question, about the top eight teams, I'm trying to like you blokes. I love the way you're playing. I think the adjustments, and we spoke a bit earlier in the year, Ollie, I think on the show as well. I'm really trying to like you, and I think you've got an enormous amount of talent. But I suspect there's a bit of frustration even internally when you get to those games, a la Adelaide the other week. You know, you get smashed around the contest. Is that a fair comment?
Certainly is. And look, I guess we've done a lot of soul searching over those games. It happened to us as well against Melbourne. We got smashed in the contested possession like we did against Adelaide. And look, I guess you just got to learn from those experiences and don't make the mistake in finals. So at this stage, we've locked up a finals berth. We're going to have the opportunity to play in September. And I guess we've got to take everything we've learned throughout the year and implement in those games, because it definitely steps up finals. You can't make a mistake or you'll be out.
Well, you've got one more game before you can get really excited. You take on the Gold Coast at home next week, Saturday night. Ollie, well done yesterday. Good luck next week and all the best for the finals.
Thanks, guys. Cheers, Amy.
Ollie Hines there, the Port Adelaide midfielder. Great to chat with him. Just quickly around the grounds, Melbourne starting to just flex their muscle a bit, Jay-Z, for near-map aerial imagery.
Yeah, by 21 points, Schwatter, 7 minutes left in the third quarter. So the D starting to take control over the lines at the MCG.
All right, this is your time to shine. Jay-Z's Big Three.
This is Jay-Z's Big Three.
Boys, there was some interesting stuff to come out of the Carlton-Hawthorn game last night. The Blues won, obviously, but one particular matchup which was quite interesting was the Jed Lamb tagging on James Sicily from Hawthorn. We know what a very good intercepting defender Sicily has been for the Hawks, but it's clearly Jed Lamb has got under his skin to the extent where Sicily gave away 7 free kicks and 2 goals for Jed Lamb. Now, we've seen this sort of issue emerge throughout the year where he's got a bit of a hot head, struggling to control his temper, taking out on his opponents and his teammates, as we saw a couple of weeks ago. I've actually had to try and calm him down on the field. And even Roughhead last night said after the game, his skipper, that he needs good people around him to try and help control him a little bit. He is out of contract at the end of the year, and there is a fair bit of talk about whether he may or may not be traded at the end of the season. Roosie, what would you do to a young guy like this who, you know, sometimes appears to struggle to sort of rein it in at times? I mean, last night, he just appeared to lose his head a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Look, and to be fair to Hawthorn, you couldn't be at a better club. I mean, what a great coach, what great mentors in Luke Hodge and Jared Ruffhead. You know, my advice to Sicily is, listen, too many young kids come into football now and don't want to listen. I don't know the kid at all, and I've never spoken to him, to be perfectly frank. But you couldn't be at a better club. You couldn't have better mentors than what he's got now. So I'd be listening to Ruffy. I know Hodgie's only got another week, but I'd be sitting there with Hodgie if I was James Sicily and having a coffee with him every single day for the next week, because the kid's clearly got talent. He can play, but obviously 7 free kicks, some stuff we've seen this year. Listen, sit down and make sure you tap into those really good minds of those Hawthorn champions and Hawthorn coaching staff and people around that footy club. And if he does that, he'll be fine.
I'd be very surprised if they traded him. And I agree with Ruzi about sitting down and listening, because he is an amazingly talented individual and football player. He can do things that others can't. And I think his development in his game this year has been terrific. Now he just needs to develop as a person and how he holds himself out in the football field. And as Ruzi said, he's at a terrific club at Hawthorn who can show him how to do that. But I tell you what, he could be an amazing player for the next 10 years.
Well, so, as I understand it, he was one of the players who were offered up to Gold Coast last year to break the Jagger O'Meara deal. He's obviously come on along since then, but that's why his name has been mentioned. It's unusual that he's still out of contract.
Very nice to hear the voice and the dulcet tones of Nathan Brown sliding into the front row. Just wants to get himself in the conversation. Welcome to you, Brownie.
Good to be here. Took me a while to get over the road from the Sunday footy show, so it did take me a while.
The other issue which emerged yesterday was Heredia Lumumba, who was obviously retired from Melbourne this year, former Collingwood premiership player. He had some interesting things to say about Nathan Buckley in The Age yesterday. Said he lacks some emotional intelligence, and the AFL really struggled to have a good handle on some multicultural issues. Last night, Collingwood coach Nathan Buckley responded.
It's a bit sad in many ways that H feels that way about his experiences in the game. I suppose I'd echo the sentiments of the club, just hoping that he's doing well and that he can still see the positives of his experience as an AFL footballer as well.
He obviously left Collingwood and then came to Melbourne. I think you were there was a photograph of him speaking to you at a cafe when you first discussed it. How did he present to you at the time, Heredia, and why did the Melbourne Footy Club take him on?
Yeah, look, I got a phone call from actually Purdy that the first when we just regularly talk, and it was before obviously the end of the season. He suggested that, look, they may be prepared to trade him, so I caught up with him, and I always found him fantastic. There's different players, different personalities at football club. I had a great relationship with him. He was really open and honest in terms of his experience at Collingwood and what he wanted to try and get out of his football. Obviously, when it finished with the concussion thing at Melbourne, but I always found him easy to deal with and no problems at all, and still have a pretty good relationship, even though he spent a fair bit of time, I think, overseas this year.
Making a documentary.
Are you surprised about his comments about Collingwood? Because at most clubs, I reckon it's a really good atmosphere, and he paints the AFL world inside a footy club as something that's pretty dark and mysterious, which every time I've been in a footy club, I've loved it.
I agree with Bucks in a way. And I've met Harry. I know Harry. Met him a lot of times. Had a beer with Harry before. And he's always been such a nice guy. He beats to a different drum. He's not, he's not your run-of-the-mill guy. Thinks a little bit differently to other guys. And he's very deep. And for all other... And so I agree with Bucks in a way. I just hope that he's in a healthy, good way. And, I just don't like seeing or hearing people that are angry or bitter, because if you feel that way, Swatter, and you probably know this better than anyone, then if you can't let that sort of stuff go or that's still affecting you, then you really can't be really happy. You can't move forward. So I agree with what Buck said. I just hope Harry's, doing really, really well.
All right, final one, Jake.
Yeah, the rules in the ruck are going to be really interesting this week, because we saw Max Gawn a week ago, and again yesterday, Paddy Ryder pinged for free kicks in the ruck, which I haven't seen before, when he sort of collided into Jordan Ruff and the Bulldogs. There were a couple of times where the umpire paid the free kick, which really was confusing, I think, to everyone. So expect the AFL to come out tomorrow. It's certainly blow up this week, just to find out what ruckmen can and can't do in the ruck contest anymore, because I didn't know what was going on. Brandy, did you see
yesterday?
Yeah.
We spoke to Paddy Wright on the Sunday footy show this morning, and he didn't know what he'd done wrong.
He's got no idea.
Yeah, he said he's going to go back to Brendan Lade, his ruck coach, this week and find out, because he doesn't want to give away free kicks, what he exactly did wrong, but he didn't realise that he was doing anything wrong.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks footy.